question. I can't begin to express how excited I am for you to meet them. I'm sure you will all agree that any one of these amazing young ladies would be a wonderful leader and future princess. But before we get to that, I'd like to announce a new project I am working on that is of great importance to me. Having met these ladies, I've been exposed to the wide world outside our palace, a world that I rarely get to see. I've been told of its remarkable goodness and made aware of its unimaginable darkness. Through speaking to these women, I've embraced the importance of the masses outside these walls. I have been woken to the suffering of some of our lower castes, and I intend to do something about it.
What?
It will be at least 3 months before we can set this up properly, but around the new year, there will be public assistance for food in every province services office. Any 5, 6, 7, or 8 may go there any evening for a free, nutritious meal. Please know that these women before you have sacrificed some or all of their compensation to help fund this important program. And while this assistance may not be able to last forever, we will keep it running as long as we can.
I kept trying to swallow up the gratitude, the awe, but a few tears leaked out. I was still aware enough of what was coming next to worry about my makeup, but so appreciative that it was no longer the top priority.
I feel that no good leader can let the masses go unfed. Most of Ilia is comprised of these lower castes, and we have overlooked these people for far too long. That is why I am moving forward, and why I am asking others to join me. 2s, 3s, 4s, the roads you drive on don't pave themselves. Your houses aren't cleaned by magic. Here is your opportunity to acknowledge that truth by donating at your local province services office.
He paused.
By birth, you have been blessed, and it is time to acknowledge that blessing. I will have further updates as this project progresses, and I thank you all for your attention. But now, let's get to the real reason you all tuned in tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Gavril Fadet.
There was a smattering of applause from everyone in the room, though it was obvious not everyone was enthusiastic about Maxon's announcement. The king, for instance, was clapping but without excitement, though the queen was radiant with pride. The advisors also seemed torn about whether or not this was a good idea.
"Thank you so much for that introduction, Your Majesty," Gavril announced as he ran onto the set. "Very well done. If this whole prince thing doesn't work out, you should consider a job in entertainment."
Maxon laughed out loud as he walked to his seat. The cameras were focused on Gavril now, but I watched Maxon and his parents. I didn't understand why their reactions were mixed.
"People of Ilia, do we have a treat for you. This evening, we'll be getting the inside scoop from each of these young women. We know you've been dying to meet them and hear how things are coming along with our Prince Maxon. So, tonight, we're just going to ask. Let's get started with..."
Gavril looked at his note cards.
"Miss Celeste Newsome of Claremont."
Celeste moved sinuously from her seat in the top row and down the steps. She actually kissed Gavril on both cheeks before she sat down. Her interview was predictable, and so was Beriel's. They tried to be sexy, bending forward a lot to get clear shots down their dresses. It looked fake. I watched their faces in the monitors as they kept glancing at Maxon and winking. Every once in a while, like when Beriel tried to smoothly lick her lips, Marley and I made brief eye contact and then had to look away so we wouldn't laugh. Others were more composed. Tiny's voice matched her name, and she seemed to fold in on herself as the interview progressed. But I knew she was sweet and hoped that Maxon wouldn't count her out just because she wasn't a great public speaker. Emeka was poised, as was Marley, the main difference being that Marley's voice was so full of excitement and enthusiasm, it flew higher and higher as she talked. Gavril asked a variety of questions, but there were two that seemed to pop up with everyone. "What do you think of Prince Maxon?" And, "Are you the girl who yelled at him?" I wasn't looking forward to telling the country that I had chided the future king. Thank goodness that, as far as anyone knew, I'd behaved that way only once. Everyone was proud to say they weren't the girl who'd yelled at him. Then, every single girl thought that Maxon was nice. That was almost always the word, nice. Celeste said that he was handsome, Bariel said he was quietly powerful, which I thought sounded creepy. A few girls were asked if Maxon had kissed them yet. They all blushed and said no. After the third or fourth no, Gavril turned on Maxon.
Haven't you kissed any of them yet?
He asked, shocked.
They've only been here 2 weeks. What kind of man do you think I am?
Maxon replied. He said it lightheartedly, but seemed to squirm in his seat a little. I wondered if he'd ever kissed anyone. Samantha had just finished saying she was having a wonderful time, and then Gavril called me. The other girls applauded as I stood, like we had for everyone. I gave Marley a nervous smile. I focused on my feet as I walked over, but once I got into the chair, I found it was easy to look right past Gavril's shoulder at Maxon. He gave me a little wink as I picked up the microphone. I felt instantly calmer. I didn't have to win anyone over. I shook Gavril's hand and sat down across from him. Up close, I could finally see the pin on his lapel. It obviously lost its detail through the camera, but now I saw that it wasn't just the lines and curls of a forte sign, but a small X was engraved in the middle, making the whole thing look almost like a star. It was beautiful.
America Singer. That's an interesting name you have there. Is there a story behind it?
Gavril asked. I sighed in relief. This was an easy one. Yes, actually. While my mom was pregnant with me, I kicked a lot. She said she had a fighter on her hands, so she named me after the country that fought so hard to keep this land together. It's odd, but to her credit, she was right. We've been fighting ever since. Gavril laughed.
She sounds like a feisty woman herself.
She is. I get a lot of my stubbornness from her.
So you're stubborn then? Have a bit of a temper?
I saw Maxon covering his mouth with his hands, laughing. Sometimes.
If you have a temper, would you happen to be the one who yelled at our prince?
I sighed. Yes, it was me. And right now my mother is having a heart attack. Maxon called out to Gavril.
Get her to tell the whole story.
Gavril whipped his head back and forth quickly.
Oh, what's the whole story?
I tried to glare at Maxon, but the whole situation was so silly it didn't quite work. I got a little claustrophobic the first night, and I was desperate to get outside. The guards wouldn't let me through the doors. I was actually about to faint in this one guard's arms, but Prince Maxon was walking by and made them open the doors for me.
Aww, Gavril said, tilting his head to one side.
Yes, and then he followed me to make sure I was all right. But I was stressed out, so when he spoke to me, I basically ended up accusing him of being stuck up and shallow. Gavril chuckled deeply at this. I looked past him to Maxon, who was shaking with laughter. But the more embarrassing thing was that the king and queen were laughing along with him. I didn't turn to look at the girls, but I heard some of them giggling too. Well, good. Maybe now they would finally stop seeing me as any sort of threat. I was just someone Maxon found entertaining.
And he forgave you?
Gavril asked, in a slightly more sober tone. Oddly enough, I shrugged.
Well, since the two of you are on good terms again, what sort of activities have you been doing together?
Gavril was back to business. We usually just go for walks around the garden. He knows I like it outside. And we talk. It sounded pathetic after what some of the other girls had said. Trips to the theater, going hunting, horseback riding. Those were impressive next to my story, but I suddenly understood why he had been speed dating over the last week. The girls needed something to tell Gavril, so he had to provide it. It still seemed weird that he hadn't mentioned any of it to me, but at least I knew why he had been away.
That sounds very relaxing. Would you say the garden is your favorite thing about the palace?
I smiled. Maybe, but the food is exquisite, so... Gavril laughed again.
You are the last five left in the competition, yes? Do you think that hurts your chances of becoming the princess?
The word sprung from my lips without thought.
No. Oh my, you do have a spirit there.
Gavril seemed pleased to have gotten such an enthusiastic response.
So you think you'll beat out all the others then? Make it to the end?
I thought better of myself. No, it's not like that. I don't think I'm better than any of the other girls. They're all amazing. It's just, I don't think Maxim would do that, just discount someone because of their caste.
I heard a collective gasp. I ran over the sentence in my head. It took me a minute to catch my mistake. I'd called him Maxon. Saying that to another girl behind closed doors was one thing, but to say his name without the word Prince in front of it was incredibly informal in public, and I'd said it on live television. I looked to see if Maxon was angry. He had a calm smile on his face, so he wasn't mad. But I was embarrassed. I blushed fiercely.
Ah, so it seems you really have gotten to know our prince. Tell me, what do you think of Maxon?
I had thought of several answers while I was waiting for my turn. I was going to make fun of his laugh or talk about the pet name he wanted his wife to call him. It seemed like the only way to save the situation was to get back the comedy. But as I lifted my eyes to make one of my comments, I saw Maxon's face. He really wanted to know. And I couldn't poke fun at him. Not when I had a chance to say what I'd really started to think, now that he was my friend. I couldn't joke about the person who'd saved me from facing absolute heartbreak at home, who fed my family boxes of sweets, who ran to me worried that I was hurt if I asked for him. A month ago, I had looked at the TV and seen a stiff, distant, boring person, someone I couldn't imagine anyone loving. And while he wasn't anything close to the person I did love, he was worthy of having someone to love in his life. Maxon Shreve is the epitome of all things good. He is going to be a phenomenal king. He lets girls who are supposed to be wearing dresses wear jeans and doesn't get mad when someone who doesn't know him clearly mislabels him. I gave Gavril a keen look and he smiled. And behind him, Maxon looked intrigued. Whoever he marries will be a lucky girl. And whatever happens to me, I will be honored to be his subject. I saw Maxon swallow, and I lowered my eyes.
America Singer, thank you so much.
Gavril went to shake my hand.
Up next is Miss Tallulah Bell.
I didn't hear what any of the girls said after me, though I stared at the two seats. That interview had become way more personal than I'd intended it to be. I couldn't bring myself to look at Maxon. Instead, I sat there replaying my words again and again in my head. The knock on my door came around 10. I flung it open, and Maxon rolled his eyes.
You really ought to have a maid in here at night.
Maxon. Oh, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to call you that in front of everyone. It was so stupid.
Do you think I'm mad at you?
He asked as he walked in and shut the door.
America, you call me by name so often it was bound to slip out. I wish it had been in a slightly more private setting, he said with a sly smile, but I don't hold that against you at all.
Really?
Of course, really.
Ugh, I felt like such an idiot tonight. I can't believe you made me tell that story. I slapped him on the side gently.
That was the best part of the whole night. Mom was really amused. In her day, the girls were more reserved than even Tiny. And here you are calling me shallow? She couldn't get over it.
Great. Now the queen thought I was a misfit, too. We walked across my room and ended up on the balcony. There was a small, warm breeze blowing the scent of the thousands of flowers in the garden toward us. A full moon shone down on us, adding to the lights around the palace, and it gave Maxon's face a mysterious glow. Well, I'm glad you're so amused, I said, running my fingers across the railing. Maxon hopped up to sit on the railing, looking very relaxed.
You're always amusing. Get used to it.
He was almost being funny.
So, about what you said, he started tentatively.
Which part? The part about me calling you names or fighting with my mom or saying food was my motivation? I rolled my eyes. He laughed once.
The part about me being good.
Oh, what about it? Those few sentences suddenly seemed more embarrassing than anything else I'd said. I ducked my head down and twisted a piece of my dress.
I appreciate you making things look authentic, but you didn't need to go that far.
My head snapped up. How could he think that? Maxon, that wasn't for the sake of the show. If you had asked me a month ago what my honest opinion of you was, it would have been very different. But now I know you, and I know the truth. And you are everything I said you were, and more. He was quiet, but there was a small smile on his face.
Thank you,
he finally said.
Anytime.
Max uncleared his throat.
He'll be lucky too.
He got down from his makeshift seat and walked to my side of the balcony.
Huh? Your boyfriend, when he comes to his senses and begs you to take him back,
Maxon said matter-of-factly. I had to laugh. No such thing would happen in my world. He's not my boyfriend anymore, and he made it pretty clear he was done with me. Even I could hear the tiny bit of hope in my voice.
Not possible. He'll have seen you on TV by now, and fallen for you, all over again. Though in my opinion, you're still much too good for the dog.
Maxon spoke almost as if he was bored, like he'd seen this happen a million times.
Speaking of which, he said a bit louder, if you don't want me to be in love with you, you're going to have to stop looking so lovely. First thing tomorrow, I'm having your maid sew some potato sacks together for you.
I hit his arm.
Shut up, Maxon. I'm not kidding. You're too beautiful for your own good. Once you leave, we'll have to send some of the guards with you. You'll never survive on your own, poor thing.
He said all this with mock pity.
I can't help it, I sighed. One can never help being born into perfection.
I fanned my face as if being so pretty was exhausting.
No, I don't suppose you can help it.
I giggled. I didn't notice for a moment that Maxon didn't seem to think it was funny. I stared out at the garden and saw out of the corner of my eye that Maxon was looking at me. His face was incredibly close to mine. When I turned to ask just what he was looking at, I was surprised to see that he was close enough to kiss me. I was even more surprised when he did. I pulled away quickly, taking a step. Maxon stepped back as well.
Sorry,
he mumbled, blushing.
What are you doing?
I asked in a shocked whisper.
Sorry.
He was slightly turned away, obviously embarrassed.
Why did you do that?
I put my hand to my mouth.
It's just with what you said earlier, and then seeking me out yesterday. Just the way you acted, I thought maybe your feelings had changed. And I like you. I thought you could tell.
He turned to face me.
And, oh, is it terrible? You don't look happy at all.
I tried to wipe whatever expression I had off my face. Maxon looked mortified.
I'm so sorry. I've never kissed anyone before. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm sorry, America.
He breathed a heavy sigh and ran his hand through his hair a few times, leaning against the railing. I didn't expect it, but a warmth filled me. He'd wanted his first kiss to be with me. I thought about the Maxon I knew now, the man full of compliments, the man prepared to give me the winnings of a bet I lost, the man who forgave me when I hurt him both physically and emotionally, and discovered that I didn't mind that at all. Yes, I still had feelings for Aspen. I couldn't undo that. But if I couldn't be with him, then what was holding me back from being with Maxon? Nothing more than my preconceived ideas of him, which were nothing close to who he was. I stepped up to him and rubbed my hand across his forehead.
What are you doing?
I'm erasing that memory. I think we can do better. I pulled my hand down and propped myself up beside him, facing toward my room. Maxon didn't move, but he did smile.
America, I don't think you can change history.
All the same, his expression looked hopeful. Sure we can. Besides, who'd ever know about it but you and me? Maxon looked at me for a moment, clearly wondering if this was really okay. Slowly, I saw a cautious confidence creep into his face as he looked into my eyes. We stayed that way for a moment, before I could remember just what I had said. One can never help being born into perfection, I whispered. He came close, wrapping an arm around my waist so that we faced each other. His nose tickled mine. He ran his fingers across my cheek so gently
It seemed he was afraid I would break.
No, I don't suppose you can, he breathed.
With his hand holding my face toward his, Maxon lowered his lips to mine and gave me the faintest whisper of a kiss. Something about the tentativeness of it made me feel beautiful. Without a word, I could understand how excited he was to have this moment, but then afraid at the same time. And deeper than any of that, I sensed that he adored me. So this was what it felt like to be a lady. After a moment, he pulled back and asked,
"Was that better?"
I could only nod. Maxon looked like he was on the verge of doing a backflip. There was a similar feeling in my chest. That was so unexpected. This was all too quick, too strange. The confusion must have shown on my face, because Maxon got serious.
"May I say something?"
I nodded again.
"I'm not so stupid as to believe that you've completely forgotten about your former boyfriend. I know what you've gone through, and that you're not exactly here under the normal circumstances. I know you think there are others here more suited for me and this life, and I wouldn't want you to rush into trying to be happy with any of this. I just want to know if it's possible."
It was a hard question to answer. Would I be willing to live a life I'd never wanted? Would I be willing to watch as he kindly tried to date the others, to be sure he wasn't making a mistake? Would I be willing to take on the responsibility that he had as a prince? Would I be willing to love him? "Yes, Maxon," I whispered. "It's possible." Chapter 19. I told no one what had happened between Maxon and me, not even Marley or my maids. It felt like a wonderful secret that I could revisit in the middle of one of Sylvia's boring lessons, or another long day in the women's room. And to be honest, I thought about our kisses, both the awkward and the sweet, more often than I expected I would. I knew I wasn't just going to fall in love with Maxon overnight. I knew my heart wouldn't let me. But I suddenly found myself in a place where that was something I might want. So I thought about the possibility, quietly in my head, though I was tempted to blurt out my secret more than once. Particularly 3 days later, when Olivia announced to the half-full women's room that Maxon had kissed her. I couldn't believe how shattered I felt. I caught myself looking at Olivia and wondering what was so special about her. "Tell us everything," Marley insisted. Most of the other girls were curious as well, but Marley was the most enthusiastic. In the short time since she and Maxon had their last date, her interest in everyone else's progress seemed to be growing. I couldn't tell what was behind the shift, and I wasn't quite brave enough to ask. Olivia didn't need encouragement. She sat down on one of the couches and fanned out her dress. It looked like she was practicing to be the princess. I felt like telling her that one kiss didn't mean she was winning. "I don't want to go into all the details, but it was quite romantic," she gushed, tucking her chin into her chest. "He took me to the roof. There's this place that's kind of like a balcony, but it looks like it's used for the guards. I couldn't tell. We could look out over the wall, and the whole city was just glittering as far as we could see. He didn't really say anything. He just pulled me in and kissed me." Her whole body contracted with joy. Marley sighed. Celeste looked like she was ready to break something. I sat there. I kept telling myself that I shouldn't care so much, that this was all part of the selection. And who's to say that I'd really want to end up with Maxon anyway? Honestly, I ought to consider myself lucky. It was clear Celeste's malice had a new target, and after the whole episode with my dress, which I realized I'd forgotten to mention to Maxon, I was glad to see her move on.
"Do you think she's the only one he's kissed?"
Tuesday whispered in my ear. Chris, who was standing beside me, heard her concerns and piped in. "He wouldn't just kiss anyone. She must be doing something right," Chris lamented. "What if he's kissed half the room and people are keeping quiet about it? Maybe it's part of their strategy," Tuesday wondered. "I don't think anyone who kept quiet would necessarily consider that a strategy," I countered. "Maybe they're just private." Chris sucked in a breath. "What if Olivia telling us all this is just some game? Now we're all worried.
And it's not as if any of us would actually ask Maxon if he'd kissed her. There's no way to tell if she's lying or not.
Do you think she would do that? I asked.
If she did, I wish I'd thought of it first, Tuesday said longingly. Chris sighed. This is much more complicated than I thought it would be.
Tell me about it, I mumbled.
I like almost everyone in this room, but when I hear about Maxon doing something with someone else, I just want to figure out how I can do one better than her, she confessed. I don't like feeling competitive toward you all.
It's kind of like what I was telling Tiny the other day, Tuesday said. I know she's a little on the timid side, but she's very ladylike, and I think she'd make a great princess. I can't be mad at her if she has more dates than me, even if I want the crown myself.
Chris and I met eyes for a second, and I could tell we were both thinking the same thing. She said crown, not him. But I let it drop, because the other part of her little speech struck on something familiar. Marley and I talk about that all the time, how we can see great qualities in each other. We all exchanged looks, and something felt different. Suddenly, I didn't feel so jealous of Olivia, or even so at odds with Celeste. We were all going through this in a different way, and maybe even for different reasons, but we were at least going through it together. Maybe Queen Amberlee was right, I said. The only thing to do is be yourself. I'd rather have Maxon send me home for being myself than keep me for being like someone else.
That's true, Chris said. And in the end, 34 people have to go. If I was the last one standing, I'd want to know I had everyone else's support. So we should try to be supportive too.
I nodded, knowing she was right. I was confident that I could do that. Just then, Elise burst into the room, followed by Zoe and Emeka. She was usually very slow and calm, and never raised her voice. Today, however, she turned her head and squealed at us.
Look at these combs, she cried, pointing to two beautiful hair ornaments that were covered in what looked like thousands of dollars worth of precious stones. Maxon gave them to me, aren't they beautiful?
This set the room into a new flurry of excitement and disappointment, and my newborn confidence disappeared. I tried not to be disappointed. After all, hadn't I received gifts? Hadn't I been kissed? But as the room filled with girls and the stories were retold, I found myself wanting to just go hide. Maybe today would be a good day to spend with my maids. As I was considering leaving the room, Sylvia came in, looking slightly frazzled and excited at the same time.
Ladies, she called out, attempting to quiet us. Ladies, are you all here?
We sang our yeses back to her.
Thank goodness for that, she said, settling down. I know this is very late notice, but we've just learned the King and Queen of Swendway are coming to visit in 3 days. And as you all know, we have relations in the royal family. Also, the Queen's extended family will be coming in to meet you at the same time, so we're going to have quite a full house. We have very little time to get ready, so clear your afternoons. Lessons in the great room immediately after lunch, she said, and turned to leave. You would have thought the palace staff had months to plan. Giant tented pavilions were set up in the gardens, with food and wine stations scattered about the lawn. The number of guards out was higher than usual, and they were joined by several Swendish soldiers the king and queen had brought with them. I guess even they knew how at risk the palace was. There was a tent with thrones set up for the king, queen, and Maxon, as well as the king and queen of Swendway. The Swendish queen, whose name I couldn't pronounce to save my life, was almost as beautiful as Queen Amberlee, and seemed to be a dear friend to her. They were all settled comfortably under that tent, except for Maxon, who was busy making rounds with all the girls and the extended members of his family. Maxon looked thrilled to see his cousins, even the little ones who kept tugging on his suit coat and running away. He had one of his many cameras out and was chasing the children with it, snapping away. Nearly all the selected girls were watching him in adoration.
America! Someone called.
I turned to my right to see Elena and Leah talking to a woman who looked almost identical to the queen.
Come and meet the queen's sister.
There was something in Elena's tone I couldn't quite name, but made me nervous about joining them. I walked over and curtsied to the lady, who cackled and said,
Stop that, honey. I'm not the queen here.
I'm Adele, Amberlee's older sister.
She extended a hand, which I took, and she hiccuped as we shook. The woman had a slight accent, and something about her was comforting, in the way that coming home feels. She was curvaceous and held a near-empty glass of wine that, based on the heavy look in her eyes, was not her first.
Where are you from? I love your accent, I said.
Some of the other girls from the South sounded similar, and their voices seemed incredibly romantic to me.
Honduraga, right by the coast. We grew up in the tiniest house, she said, making a space the size of an inch between her finger and thumb. And look at her now. Look at me, she said, motioning down to her dress. Such a change.
I live in Carolina, and my parents took me to the coast once. I loved it, I replied.
Oh, no, 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 child, she said, waving her hand about.
Elena and Leah looked like they were holding in laughter. Clearly, they didn't think the Queen's sister should be quite so familiar.
The beaches in Middle Ilia are trash compared to the ones down south. You have to go see one day.
I smiled and nodded, thinking that I'd love to see more of the country, but it was doubtful I ever would. Shortly after, one of Adele's many children came up to her and pulled her away, and Elena and Leah burst into laughter.
Isn't she hilarious? Leah said.
I don't know, she seems friendly, I replied with a shrug.
She's vulgar, Elena replied. You should have heard all the things she said before you came up.
What was so bad about her?
You'd think she'd have picked up a few lessons in decorum over the years. How did Sylvia not get a hold of her? Leah said with a sneer.
Need I remind you she was raised as a four, same as you? I shot back.
Her smug expression faltered, and she seemed to remember that she and Adele weren't so different. Elena, however, was a natural three, and kept on talking.
You can bet if I win, my family will either be trained or deported. I wouldn't let any of them embarrass me like that.
What was so embarrassing? I asked.
Elena sucked her teeth.
She's drunk. The Queen and King of Swendway are here. She ought to be caged.
I decided that was enough, and walked away to get some wine of my own. Once I had a glass, I looked around, and honestly couldn't find a single place I wanted to settle. The whole reception was beautiful and interesting, and completely aggravating. I thought about what Elena had said. If I ended up living in the palace, would I expect my family to change? I looked at the children running around, the people huddled together catching up. Wouldn't I want Kenna to be exactly who she was? Want her children enjoying all this, no matter how they behaved? How much would living at the palace change me? Would Maxon want me to change? Was that why he was off kissing other girls? Because there was something not quite right about me? Was the rest of the selection going to feel this irritating?
Smile.
I turned, and Maxon snapped a picture of me. I bounced back in surprise. That unexpected picture wore out the last of my patience, and I turned away.
Something wrong?
Maxon asked, lowering the camera. I shrugged.
What's going on?
I just don't feel like being a part of the selection today, I answered curtly.
Unfazed, Maxon stepped closer and lowered his voice.
Need someone to talk to? I could tug my ear right now, he offered.
I sighed and tried to put a polite smile on my face.
No, I just need to think.
I went to leave.
America, he said quietly.
I stopped and turned.
Have I done something?
I hesitated. Should I ask him about kissing Olivia? Should I tell him how tense I was feeling around the girls, now that things had changed between us? Should I tell him how I didn't want to change myself or my family to be a part of this? I was about to let everything spill out, when a shrill voice called from behind us.
Prince Maxon!
We turned, and Celeste was standing there, talking to the Queen of Swendway. It was clear she wanted to have this conversation with Maxon on her arm. She waved, inviting him over.
Why don't you run along?
I said, my annoyance leaking into my voice again. Maxon looked at me. The expression on his face reminded me that this was part of the deal. I was expected to share.
Careful with that one. I gave Maxon a quick curtsy and walked away.
I made my way toward the palace, and along the way noticed Marley sitting alone. I didn't even want to be with her right now, but I noticed she was parked on a bench near the back wall of the palace, in the brutally hot sun. Her closest companion, a young, silent guard, stationed just a few yards away.
Marley, what are you doing? Get under a tent before you burn your skin.
She gave me a polite smile.
I'm happy here.
No, really, I said, putting a hand around her arm.
You'll look like my hair. You should...
Marley jerked her hand out of my grip, but spoke gently. I want to stay here, America. I prefer it. There was a tension in her face she was trying to mask. I was sure she wasn't upset with me, but something was going on.
Fine. Try to get some shade soon, though. Sunburns hurt, I said, attempting to cover my frustration, and walked toward the palace.
Once inside, I decided to go to the women's room. I couldn't be gone for too long, and at least that room would be empty. But when I went in, I found Adele, sitting near the window and watching the scene unfold outside. She turned when I entered and gave me a small smile. I walked over and sat next to her.
Hiding?
She smiled.
Kind of. I wanted to meet you all and see my sister again. But I hate it when these things turn into state functions. They make me tense.
I'm not such a fan myself. I couldn't imagine doing things like this all the time.
I bet, she said lazily. You're the five, right?
The way she said it, it wasn't an insult. More like she was asking if I was in the club. Yeah, that's me.
I remembered your face. You were sweet at the airport. It's the kind of thing she would have done, she said, nodding out the window toward the queen.
She sighed.
I don't know how she does it. She's stronger than most people know.
I watched her pick up a wine glass and sip away. She does seem strong, but ladylike, too.
Adele beamed. Yes, but it's more than that. Look at her now.
I watched the queen. I noticed her eyes were trained across the lawn. I followed her gaze, and she was watching Maxon. He was speaking to the Queen of Swendway next to Celeste, while one of his cousins clung to his leg.
He would have been a great brother, she said. Amberley had 3 miscarriages, 2 before him, 1 after. She still thinks about it, she tells me so. And then, I have 6 kids. I feel guilty every time I show up.
I'm sure she doesn't think of it that way. I'll bet she's excited every time you visit, I assured her. She turned.
You know what makes her happy? You do. Do you know what she sees out there? A daughter. She knows that when this is all over, she'll have 2 children.
I turned from Adele to look at the queen again. You think so? She seems a little distant. I haven't even spoken to her yet.
Adele nodded. Just you wait. She's terrified of becoming attached to all of you just to watch you leave. Once it's a smaller group, you'll see.
I looked at the queen again, and then at Maxon, back to the king, and then to Adele. So much went through my head. How families are families no matter their castes. How mothers all have their own worries to bear. How I really didn't hate any of the girls here, no matter how wrong they might be. How everyone out there must be putting on a brave face for some reason or another. And finally, how Maxon had made me a promise. Excuse me. I have someone I need to talk to. She sipped her wine and happily waved me away. I ran out of the room and back into the blinding sun of the gardens. I searched around for a moment and found that Maxon's young cousin had begun chasing him around a shrub. I smiled and approached slowly. Finally, Maxon stopped, waving his hands in the air, admitting his defeat. As he laughed, he turned and saw me, his smile still wide on his face. When our eyes met, his smile faded. He searched my face, looking for a sign of my mood. I bit my lip and looked down. It was clear that caring about what happened to me as a member of the selection would mean processing a lot of other feelings that I hadn't been prepared for. However, I took them in. I had to try not to force them out on other people, especially Maxon. I thought about the queen, hosting visiting leaders, family members, a gaggle of girls all at once. She managed events and backed causes. She assisted her husband, her son, and the country. And underneath it all, she was a 4, who held her own heartbreaks, and never let her former rank or current aches
keep her from doing it all. I looked beneath my eyelashes at Maxon and smiled. He slowly smiled back and whispered something to the little boy, who immediately turned and ran away. He reached up and tugged his ear. And I did the same.
Chapter 20. The Queen's family stayed a few days, and the visitors from Swendway an entire week. They did a segment on the report, discussing international relations and movements toward more peace for both nations. It was now a month into my stay at the palace, and I was completely at home. My body was comfortable in the new climate. The warmth of the palace was heavenly, like a holiday. September was almost over, and it got very cool in the evenings, but it was much warmer than home. The sights of this giant space were no longer a mystery. The sounds of heeled shoes on marble, crystal glasses clinking, guards marching, they were starting to become as normal as the refrigerator humming, or Jared kicking a soccer ball up against the house. Meals with the royal family and times in the women's room were staples in my routine, but the middle moments of my day were always new. I spent a lot of time working on music. The instruments at the palace were far superior to the ones I had at home. I had to admit, they were making me spoiled. The quality of the sound was unimaginably better, and the women's room had gotten a little more exciting, as the queen had shown up at least twice now. She hadn't really spoken to anyone yet, but she sat in a comfortable chair with her maids at her side, watching as we read or conversed. In general, the animosity had settled as well. We were getting used to one another. We finally found out the magazine's top picks for our photographs. I was shocked to see I was one of the front runners. Marley was in the top spot, with Chris, Tallulah, and Bariel close behind. Celeste didn't talk to Bariel for days upon hearing this, but eventually, everyone let it pass. What still seemed to bring the most tension were the bits of information tossed around. Whoever had been with Maxon recently couldn't help but gush about their little interlude. The way everyone spoke, it seemed as if Maxon was going to be choosing 6 or 7 wives. But not everyone was shining in this experience. For instance, Marley had more than a few dates with Maxon, which put everyone on edge. Still, she never came across as excited as she had after their very first one. "America, if I tell you this, you will have to swear not to tell a soul," she said, as we walked in the garden. I knew it was something serious. She'd waited until we got far away from the listening ears of the women's room, and far beyond the eyes of the guards. "Of course, Marley. Are you all right?" "Yes, I'm fine. I need your opinion on something." Her face was heavy with worry. "What's wrong?" She bit her lip. "It's Maxon. I'm not sure it's going to work out." She looked down. "What makes you think that?" I asked, concerned. "Well, for starters, I don't feel anything, you know? No spark. No connection. Maxon can be a little shy is all. You have to give him time." This was true. I was surprised she didn't know that about him. "No, I mean, I don't think I like him." "Oh." That was something very different. "Have you tried?" What a stupid question. "Yes, so hard. I keep waiting for a moment to come when he'll say or do something to make me feel like we have something in common, but it never happens. I think he's handsome, but that's not enough to build a whole relationship on. I don't even know if he's attracted to me. Do you have any idea what kinds of things he, you know, likes?" I thought about it. "No, actually. We've never talked about what he's looking for in the physical department." "And that's another thing. We never talk. He talks on and on to you, but we never seem to have anything to say. We spend a lot of our time quietly watching something or playing cards." She looked more worried by the minute. "Sometimes we're quiet together, too. Sometimes we just sit and say nothing. Besides, feelings like that don't always happen overnight. Maybe you're both just taking it slow." I tried to sound reassuring. Marley looked like she was on the verge of tears. "Honestly, America, I think the only reason I'm still here is because the people like me so much. I think their opinions matter to him." That thought hadn't occurred to me, but it sounded plausible. Long ago, I'd dismissed their opinion, but Maxon loved his people.
They'd have more of a hand in choosing the next princess than they would know.
And besides, she whispered, everything between us feels so empty.
Then the tears came. I sighed and hugged her. Truthfully, I wanted her to stay, to be here with me. But if she didn't love Maxon...
Marley, if you don't want to be with Maxon, I think you need to tell him.
Oh no, I don't think I can.
You have to. He doesn't want to marry someone who doesn't love him. If you don't have any feelings for him, he needs to know.
She shook her head. I can't just ask to leave. I need to stay. I couldn't go home. Not now.
Why, Marley? What's keeping you here?
For a moment, I wondered if Marley and I shared the same dark secret. Maybe there was someone she needed distance from, too. The only difference in our situations was that Maxon knew about mine. I wanted her to say it. I wanted to know I wasn't the only one who'd ended up here out of some ridiculous circumstances. But Marley's tears stopped almost as quickly as they started. She sniffed a few times and straightened up. She smoothed out her day dress, squared her shoulders, and turned to face me. She pulled a strong, warm smile to her face and spoke.
You know what? I bet you're right.
She started to back away.
I'm sure if I just give it some time, it'll all work out. I have to go. Tiny's expecting me.
Marley half ran back to the palace. What in the world had come over her? The next day, Marley avoided me. The day after that, too. I made a point of sitting in the women's room at a safe distance, and making sure to acknowledge her whenever we crossed paths. I wanted her to know that she could trust me. I wouldn't make her talk. It took 4 days for her to give me a sad, knowing smile. I just nodded. It seemed that would be all there was to say about whatever was going on in Marley's heart. That same day, while I was sitting in the women's room, Maxon called for me. It would be a lie to say I wasn't absolutely giddy when I ran out the door and into his arms.
Maxon,
I breathed, falling into him. When I stepped back, he sort of fumbled a moment, and I knew why. The day we'd left the Swenway reception and went inside to talk, I confessed what a hard time I was having, dealing with the way I felt, and I asked him not to kiss me until I was more certain. I could tell he was hurt, but he nodded, and hadn't broken his promise yet. It was just too hard to decipher those feelings when he acted like he was my boyfriend, but clearly wasn't. There were still 22 girls here, after Camille, Michaela, and Layla had been sent home. Camille and Layla were simply incompatible, and left with very little fanfare. Michaela got so homesick she burst into heaving sobs during breakfast 2 days later. Maxon escorted her from the room, patting her shoulder the whole way. He seemed fine with letting them go, and was happy to focus on his other prospects, myself included. But he and I both knew it would be foolish of him to invest his heart completely in me, when even I wasn't sure where mine was.
How are you today?
He asked, stepping back.
Perfect, of course. What are you doing here? Aren't you supposed to be working?
The president of the infrastructure committee is sick, so the meeting was postponed. I'm free as a bird all afternoon.
His eyes were gleaming.
What do you want to do?
He asked, holding his arm out for me.
Anything. There's so much of the palace I still haven't seen. There are horses here, right? And the movie theater. You still haven't taken me there.
Let's do that. I could use something relaxing. What kinds of movies do you like best?
He asked as we started walking toward where I guessed the stairwell to the basement was.
Honestly, I don't know. I don't get to watch a lot of movies, but I like romantic books and comedies too.
Romance, you say?
He raised his eyebrows like he was up to no good. I had to laugh. We turned a corner and continued to talk. As we approached, a mass of the palace guard pulled to the side of the hall and saluted. There had to be more than a dozen men standing in the hallway. I was used to them by now. Even the sight of a collection that big couldn't distract me from the fun time I was about to have with Maxon. What did stop me was when I heard the gasp that escaped someone's mouth as we passed. Maxon and I both turned. And there was Aspen. I gasped too. A few weeks ago, I'd heard some administrator in the palace talk about the draft in passing. I had wondered about Aspen,
But seeing as I was running late to one of Sylvia's many lessons, I didn't really have a chance to speculate much. So, he'd been taken by the draft after all. Of all the places he could have gone. Maxon caught on.
America, do you know this young man?
It had been more than a month since I'd seen Aspen, but this was the person I'd spent years committing to memory, who still visited my dreams. I would know him anywhere. He looked a little bigger, like he'd been fed, really fed, and was working out a lot. His scraggly hair had been cut short, practically all gone, and I was used to seeing him in secondhand clothes that were barely being held together by threads. And here he was, in one of the brilliant fitted uniforms of the palace guard. He was alien and familiar at once. So many of the things around him seemed wrong. But those eyes... those were Aspen's eyes. My eyes fell to the name tag on his uniform, Officer Ledger. I doubted a second had passed. I kept myself composed enough that no one saw the storm raging inside, a miracle in and of itself. I wanted to touch him, kiss him, scream at him, demand he leave my sanctuary. I wanted to melt away and disappear. But I felt so very here. None of it made sense. I cleared my throat. Yes, Officer Ledger comes from Carolina. He's actually from my hometown. I smiled at Maxon. No doubt Aspen would have heard us laughing as we rounded the corner. Would have noted that my arm was still draped on the princess. Let him make of that what he would. Maxon seemed excited for me.
Well, how about that? Welcome, Officer Ledger. You must be happy to see your champion girl again.
Maxon held his hand out and Aspen shook it. Aspen's face was like a stone.
Yes, Your Majesty, very much so.
What did that mean?
I'm sure you're pulling for her, too,
Maxon encouraged as he winked at me.
Of course, Your Majesty.
Aspen bowed his head a bit. And what did that mean?
Excellent. Since America is from your home province, I can't think of a better man in the palace to leave her with. I'll make sure you're put on guard rotation. This girl of yours refuses to keep a maid in her room at night. I've tried to tell her.
Maxon shook his head at me. Aspen finally seemed to relax a bit.
I'm not surprised by that, Your Majesty.
Maxon smiled.
Well, I'm sure you all have a busy day ahead of you. We'll just be off. Good day, officers.
Maxon gave a quick nod and pulled me away. It took all the strength in my body not to look back. In the dark of the theater, I tried to figure out what to do. Maxon had made it clear from the night I'd told him about Aspen that he hated anyone who would treat me with so little care. If I told Maxon that the man he'd just assigned to watch over me was that very person, would he punish him somehow? I wouldn't put it past him. He'd invented an entire support system for the country, based on my stories of being hungry. So I couldn't tell him. I wouldn't tell him. Because as mad as I was, I loved Aspen. And I couldn't bear him being hurt. Then should I leave? The ambivalence pulled at my heart. I could escape Aspen, get away from his face. A face that would torture me every day when I saw it, and knew it was no longer mine. But if I left, I'd have to leave Maxon too. And Maxon was my closest friend. Maybe even more. I just couldn't go. Besides, how would I explain it without telling him Aspen was here? And my family. Maybe the checks they got were smaller, but at least they were getting them. May had written saying that Dad was promising our best Christmas ever this year. But I was sure that came with the stipulation that another Christmas might never be as good. If I left, who could say how much money my past fame would bring for my family? We had to save up as much as we could now.
You didn't like that one, did you?
Maxon asked nearly 2 hours later. Huh?
The movie. You didn't laugh or anything.
Oh. I tried to remember one little piece of information, a single scene that I could say I'd enjoyed. Nothing registered. I think I'm just a little out of it today. Sorry you wasted your afternoon.
Nonsense.
Maxon waved away my lackluster attitude.
I just enjoy your company, though perhaps you should take a nap before dinner.
You're looking a little pale.
I nodded. I was considering going to my room and never coming back out.
Chapter 21. In the end, I decided against hiding in my room. Instead, I chose the women's room. Usually, I darted in and out all day, visiting libraries, taking walks with Marley, or even heading back upstairs to visit my maids. But now, I was using the women's room like a cave. No men, not even guards, were allowed inside without the Queen's express permission. It was perfect. Well, it was perfect for 3 days. With this many girls, it was only a matter of time until someone had a birthday. Chris's was on Thursday. I guessed she'd mentioned it to Maxon, who seemed to never pass up an opportunity to give someone something, and the outcome was a mandatory party for all the selected. As a result, Thursday was a mad rush of girls, in and out of one another's rooms, asking what they were wearing, or guessing at how grand it would be. It didn't appear that gifts were required, but I figured I'd do something nice for her all the same. On the day of the party, I donned one of my favorite day dresses and grabbed my violin. I crept down to the great room, looking around corners before I committed to walking on. Once I made it to the room, I did another sweep, surveying the guards who lined the walls. Mercifully, Aspen was nowhere to be seen, and I had to chuckle at the presence of so many men in uniform. Were they expecting a riot or something? The great room was decorated beautifully. Special vases hung on the wall, displaying huge arrangements of yellow and white flowers, and similar bouquets sat in bowls around the room. Windows, stretches of wall, and pretty much anything that didn't move was draped in garlands. A few small tables had been set out, and they were covered with bright linens. Little bits of glittering confetti sparkled on the tabletops. Ornate bows adorned the backs of chairs. In one corner, a massive cake that matched the colors of the room waited to be cut. Next to it, a small table held a few gifts for the birthday girl. A string quartet was set up against the wall, effectively making my attempt at a gift meaningless, and a photographer wandered the room, capturing moments for the public eye. The mood in the room was playful. Tiny, who had so far only managed to get close to Marley, was talking to Emeka and Jenna, and looking more animated than I'd ever seen her. Marley hovered near a window, looking like one of the many guards dotting the wall. She made no effort to leave her chosen spot, but stopped anyone who passed by to chat. A group of threes, Kaylee, Elizabeth, and Emily, all turned and waved and smiled. I returned the gesture. Everyone seemed so friendly and happy today. Except for Celeste and Bariel. Usually they were inseparable, but today they were on opposite ends of the room, with Bariel speaking to Samantha, and Celeste sitting alone at a table, clutching a crystal glass of deep red liquid. I'd obviously missed something between yesterday's dinner and this afternoon. I gripped my violin case and walked toward the back of the room to see Marley. "Hi, Marley. This is something, isn't it?" I asked, setting down the violin. "It sure is." She hugged me. "I hear Maxon's coming by later to wish Chris a happy birthday in person. Isn't that sweet? I'll bet he has a present, too." Marley went on in her typical enthusiastic way. I still wondered what her secret was, but I trusted her enough to bring up the subject if she really needed to talk about it. We spoke of little nothings for a few minutes, until we heard a general clamor at the front end of the room. Marley and I both turned, and while she remained calm, I was completely deflated. Chris's dress choice had been incredibly strategic. Here we all were in day dresses, short girlish things, and she was in a floor-length gown. But the length meant little. It was that her dress was a creamy, almost white color. Her hair was done up with a row of yellow jewels, pinned into a line across the front, in a very subtle resemblance to a crown. She looked mature, regal, bridal. Even though I wasn't entirely sure where my heart was, I felt a pang of jealousy. None of us would ever get a similar moment. No matter how many parties or dinners came and went, it would be rather pathetic to try to copy Chris's look. I saw Celeste's hand, the one that wasn't clutching her drink, ball into a fist. "She looks really pretty," Marley commented wistfully. "Better than pretty," I replied. The party continued on,
and Marley and I mostly crowd-watched. Surprisingly, and suspiciously, Celeste clung to Chris, talking up a storm as Chris circled the room, thanking everyone for coming, even though we really had no choice.